welcome to another episode of We the People Radio. Today is February 8th, 2026. My name is Aaron Ryan.
And I'm Bill Cundiff.
Well, Willis.
Yes.
What do you have for us today?
Well, I'd like to say we have some good news, but got some.
I know. Yeah, a little bit of a
challenging news today.
A dearth of good news yet again.
Can I throw something in really quick?
Oh, please do.
Oh, yeah. So today is a big cultural event. It's called the Super Bowl.
Stupid Bowl?
Yeah. And so there's these gambling apps you can use to find out, you know, what color the sports drink's going to be when you spill it on the winning coach's head, or how many times, you know, the mascot gets physically assaulted by patrons.
That's just sad.
But I have a tip.
You do?
I do. I can tell you right now, before the game even starts, what the score is going to be.
Okay.
All right.
Do we have to watch the game to know?
No.
Okay, good.
Good tip for your listeners. Get out your paper and pencil. Here's what the score is going to be before the game even starts. 0-0.
0-0.
Before the game starts, is 0-0.
I'm going to put money on that.
Huh. So Kings versus Sharks, 0-0.
Yep. Kings versus the Maple Leafs.
That's my little shtick for the day. Thanks.
I like it.
Yeah.
You'll have to hang through the commercial to learn about the color of the what is it? The color
Bad Bunny's
of
the underwear.
Oh man.
Sorry, Bill made it dirty.
Yeah.
Made it dirty.
Bill wrecked it.
Yep.
Good God, let's get to Mike. Let's talk about the dire state of the gas crisis on the West Coast. So, just in case you have not been paying attention, I set up a domain. It's called gascrisis.org. Just simple, straightforward, gascrisis.org. It does take you to We the People Radio, but it takes you to a focused page about the gas crisis. Hence the name, right? And I'm putting all of the things that that Mike and Professor Miche and Stan Ellis are putting out. I'm just adding all those to that one page. So it's kind of a one-stop shop. I'm also putting all the interviews there. We have all three of them on next week, but Mike agreed to come on for an hour with us this afternoon just to give us an update specifically on Valero closing down. Because that really was his, field of work. How about that? So he was the, he was in the Navy. Go Navy. Robert, weren't you in the Navy? No, you were Army. Oh, he was in the Air Force. I forgot. God, all I had left was Marines. I was getting closer. I was circling the target. Okay, go all of you. So he used to work, you know, he was a senior refinery technician and whatever, an A complex control board supervisor. I guess A is better than B, huh? Refinery safety committee chairman and the environmental controls unit SME for Exxon Valero and the Benicia refinery. So he was there for quite a while and knows how that works. So I realized in speaking with him the other day, we don't really know a lot about, I mean, we've got the idea of what refineries do, but we don't know all the ins and outs of refineries. So when we talk about refineries closing down, the danger is we think, oh, well, they'll just reopen or something.
No.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. And then I hear Mike in the back of my mind going, no. So we thought maybe today you could give us sort of the nickel tour of what goes on in the refining process, because there's a lot to it. A lot more than just, you hear some oil, now it becomes gas, the end, right?
Yeah. It comes in, miracle occurs here, product's out, now it doesn't.
The miracle of modern technology?
Yeah. The refineries, all the refineries are very complex. The processes are very complex. There's a lot of hazards, dangers, stuff like that involved in refining the crude oil. The key to it was just respecting those dangers, and then, you know, usually they'd make a mistake. But basically the crude oil will come into the refinery. You come from wherever. Crude oil is a mix of all kinds of components, of asphaltenes to carbon to jet to diesel, lighter components like gasoline that are naturally in the crude oil. It all depends on where it comes from. Some refineries will run one straight crude oil from a source. Other refineries, like Benicia, used to run a mix of kind of a balance of different components within the crude oil to optimize the refinery, to optimize its gasoline, jet, and diesel production. So basically, the crude oil is brought either by pipeline or by tanker across the ocean or from Alaska or wherever. It's brought into the refinery. It's heated up. It's cleaned up. You actually got to clean it because, you know, it's coming out of the ground. So there's salts, there's dirt. It actually gets water washed in the process. And then that water goes off to their wastewater treating plant. But the crude oil gets heated up the first part of the process. There's two processes to refining crude oil. The first one is distillation or fractionation. The second is conversion or cracking. So in the first part of it, the crude oil gets heated up, cleaned up, and then it gets put into a huge tower, column or tower, very tall, very wide, in that about 720 degrees. The stuff that is lighter, what is referred to as lighter, which would be like the diesel, the jet fuel, the gasoline, and the butane lighter components, they distill up the tower. It's just one big still. And all different sections of the tower, you're controlling the temperature. To where, you know, you're going up the tower, the diesel will start to condense out and you can draw it off. Then the lighter components go up, which would be the jet fuels next, around tray 12 in that tower. It was drawn off, and then gasoline and lighter goes off the top of the tower, what they call the overhead, and it goes on to other fractionating towers where they separate butane from propane. They separate the gasoline from the butane and propane. So there's like four or five different towers where this separation occurs. What didn't distill up the tower and leave the tower, that first tower drops down to the bottom of the tower. It's pumped out. It's heated up even higher to about 804, 805 degrees. Then it's put into a tower that's under a total vacuum. And what that does for you is it lowers all of the boiling points. So you want to draw off the vacuum gas oils, the light gas oils, the heavy gas oils, and then what comes out of that bottom of that tower, it'll set up an ambient temperature. It's called resid. It's like asphalt. Basically, it's like an asphalt-type component. So what didn't distill out of the tower goes on, and it gets sent to what's called conversion units, where they use different, there's actually three types. There's a fluid catalytic cracking unit, and then what they call typically a hydrocracker. These units run from, I don't know, 20 psi up to 3,000 psi, and anywhere from 500 to as high as 1,200 degrees Fahrenheit.
Wow.
And what you're doing with those components, this is where your big money-making opportunity is, to your ability to take those. When you could take stuff like gear oil component or grease-type components, you know, a lot of hydrocarbons, a lot of carbons in the molecule, they pass those across a catalyst and they break those molecules. And what they're shooting for depends on which refinery you're at and what the industry is around that refinery, like Flying J down in Bakersfield, where Stan's from. That refinery down there was designed to make more diesel and some gasoline. The refinery in Richmond, Chevron, that refinery is designed to make more jet fuel and gasoline. And then Valero, the Benicia refinery, which was Exxon originally, they Exxon SO, Humble Oil, back in 68, 69, then they changed their name to Exxon, I think, a year later. But they saw the vision of what was happening in California with the population increasing, with traffic, you know, more and more cars. I mean, we're talking back in 69, which, you know, we were all around for. So, you know, even back then, we know this. You don't have to be a refining, you know, genius to know this. You can understand this. All of us can. that back then the cars population was increasing, businesses were increasing, California was, you know, strong economy and getting stronger. So Exxon saw the need to build a refinery that could make as much gasoline as possible out of what crude oil it brought in. So Valero per barrel of crude oil feed that comes into it converts more of that to gasoline than any refinery in the state of California. That's why it's shutting down on January 31st. That and its jet fuel and diesel production, that's why it is really, it's not good. We're in a bad situation.
So it's already shut down?
That's correct. It shut down January 31st. A couple days later, the professor said he got reports of thermal imaging and said it was cold. And then the day afterwards, my buddy, who's retired, he's in Mississippi now, but he told me, Mike, the crude unit, cat unit, and coker, they're all completely shut down. That means it's down. And they had to come down for inspections, but more than likely, it's very unlikely they're going to come back up and go till April. If they do, it'll be at very reduced rates because they canceled their crude oil contracts back in October. So since then, they've been drafting their tanks, taking their tanks out of service. So the tanks for like the cat unit, the coker, the hydrocracker, they've been drafting those tanks down to minimum so they can clear them. It's not a turnaround. It's not a maintenance period. They're shutting down. So they're taking these tanks completely out of service. It is more than likely by now that those tanks are at minimum level. And finally, they just ran out of the ability to send anything to the unit to keep them running. So they pulled the plug on it. And again, you know, they were saying until April. They are down now. That's 4.3 to 4.5 million gallons a day of gasoline is offline. It's not coming back. That takes us to 42 to 43% of imports. We are importing 42 to 43% of our gasoline from India, South Korea, and Singapore.
Hmm. So with Valero shutting down, they've already increased those imports, obviously, to make up the difference?
Well, you know, we were kind of thinking they were limited before Valero shuts down. We'll see. I think the state was not designed to bring these imports in. They were designed to bring crude oil in on tankers to the refinery docks or pipe it in from Southern California. They were designed to bring the crude oil in. Our main concern right now, there's two concerns. One is that we're at a limit on what we can bring in from tankers that we can offload and get out to various parts of the state and Reno and Vegas and Phoenix. The other part is, and this is where Governor Newsom is so disingenuous, and I'm trying to be kind here, because, you know, you can have storms where I've actually cut the refinery back because of storms, because crude oil was being held up in Alaska. You can have another refinery. We're down to 7 now, down from 40. We're down to 7. If another refinery goes offline, that will cripple us. They had a problem at the Port of Los Angeles with their cargo ship a month ago that caught fire. The fire was so bad they pulled it out away from the dock. If we have a problem out in the world, we have something develop with Taiwan or some other situation or some other storms or something that impacts the supply, it will very quickly put us into a shortage because we don't have the refineries to recover ourselves out of the shortage. Back in the 70s, when we had our crude oil embargo, once the crude oil came back, we had the ability to refine that crude oil. We had the ability to get the whole country back on its feet and keep going. If any of these scenarios occur, and to think that these things, some of these things won't occur is, in my opinion, is extremely naive. And again, I would call the governor out as disingenuous because he has no control over these things. He cannot predict them. He has no control, yet he looks right at us and says, hey, don't worry about it. We got it handled. It's like, how do you got it handled? If you get a typhoon out there near Singapore, how do you handle that?
Yeah.
You can't. You can't handle these things. You were absolutely disingenuous to your populace.
So as far as the imports go, we were importing the crude oil to be refined here. Now, without the refineries, are we importing the finished product? Or because it doesn't do any good to import the crude oil if there's no place to send it.
Yeah, and that's, you know, Bill, that's the part that I'm puzzled, because the feds, President Trump and his Secretary of Transportation and Duffy, they've taken intervention on the offshore platforms off of Santa Barbara, Hondo, Harmony, and Heritage, which is on the Outer Continental Shelf. They actually took that line, pipeline, going to California and into Kern County, and they re-termed it as interstate, not intrastate. And basically they told California, we're going to start pumping crude oil from here back into the state because they were taking the crude. And back when I ran the refinery, we got crude oil from there. What they've been doing since like 2015 is sending crude oil, our California Outer Continental Shelf crude oil, they've been sending it to South Korea, and then they refine it and bring it to us. So, yes, what's coming in, and this is the danger. This is all our refined product. You know, it's like I saw one write-up where it said, hey, China, please keep bringing us jet fuel while we're defending Taiwan against you.
Yeah, what could go wrong?
What could go wrong? And right. A lot of our fuel comes in on Chinese Costco tankers.
Dang. Well, let's let that sink in for 5 seconds and take a quick break here. We're going to come back with our guest, Mike Ariza. You can find all the information on this specific issue at gascrisis.org. But you are listening to We the People Radio. We'll be right back.
We are the best shuffling crew, shuffling on down, doing it for you. We're so bad, we know we're good, blowing your mind like a new year's would. You know we're just strutting for fun, strutting our stuff on everyone. We're not here to start no trouble, we're just here to do the Super Bowl shuffle.
There you go, Mike.
You never disappoint.
Tell us more about the weird science at the refinery. Since I just exhausted my knowledge with what I learned from the song.
Oh.
So basically what we're looking at now is more and more refined product being shipped over from Korea and points beyond, rather than the actual crude oil coming in.
Yeah, and that's the thing. If we'll go back to the crude oil real quick, but if you look at the history, I've been on a couple of different things, and you know, down to LA Radio on Thursday. People don't understand. They don't know, but they don't understand that this started back in the 80s, but it really took off in 2023 when they converted Rodeo ConocoPhillips and they converted Marathon Martinez to renewable diesel. They took those two refineries off 360,000 barrels a day of crude oil production, okay? Well, if you're just doing renewable diesel, you don't make the gasoline, you don't make the jet fuel, you don't make the propane, which is a big one up north where we're at. You don't make any of those components. So back in 2023, we started importing somewhere around 18 to 20% of our gasoline at that point. You know, same thing with jet fuel, and then, you know, propane was just offline. Then, fast forward to October of 2025, we know about the egregious regulations, the fines that these refineries are going to get slammed with. You know, when they made this tank farm announcement where the refineries had to hold up more gasoline and then look, you were looking at making them build more storage tanks. It was like a few days later, Phillips 66 said, okay, with everything and this, we're done. Okay. So they went down in October. They just shut down. That was another 9% of our gasoline, 9, 10, 8, you know, depending on what they're doing that day. But basically we went from around 20% importing in October to 30% importing. And then Valero also, not too long after the announcement from Phillips 66, they announced that they were going to shut down. That took another 12 percent of the state's gasoline production offline. So we're well over now importing 40% of it. And the thing is that the state has been, like the CEO of Chevron says, you know, was quoted, it says they the state has been at war with the refineries for 25 years. Case in point, Valero took a $1.1 billion with a B dollar loss to shut the refinery down and get out of California.
Yeah, that tells you a lot, doesn't it?
They're willing,
willing to take that kind of a loss just to get out.
Well, the thing is, they don't, Chevron, you know, everybody, a lot of folks know that after 140 years of being headquartered in California, they moved to Houston. Their refineries, I'm pretty convinced they're still running because they own their own crude oil. Okay, when Exxon owned the Benicia refinery when I was there running it, they own their own crude oil. So they would sell crude oil to the you know, you got the upstream, the midstream. The upstream is the crude oil production. The midstream is the refinery. Downstream is everything after that, the consumers and all that. See, the upstream, they were making a lot of money selling the crude oil to their own refinery. And even if the refinery back then, the margins were not good, and maybe they were even taking a little bit of a loss, Exxon would just write off the loss. And it's because they were making a whole lot of money, you know, selling their own crude oil to the refinery. Well, Chevron owns their own crude oil. Valero does not. Phillips 66 does not. They don't own their crude oil. And the losses that the refineries are taking, they're not the little minor losses they were taking back in the day. They're huge losses, and then they're getting set with huge fines. Valero spent $600 or $700 million building an MEA unit, a wet gas scrubber, a steam generator, and two brand new furnaces for the crude unit to get the remaining the SO2 sulfur dioxide and particulate slippage that was going out the main stack and had been doing it for 40 years. They invested all that money, and then here they are getting slapped with the largest fine in the history of the state for their hydrogen generation unit, which every refinery has hydrogen generation units, you know, multiple hydrogen generation units in most cases. It's the cleanest unit in the refinery. They make hydrogen and carbon dioxide. Then they get slapped an $82 million fine, and the kicker on that was the Barrier Air Quality Management District changed the way in which the fine was distributed. So suddenly now the offended or hurt community gets like half of the fine, and then they quote on their report that, you know, Valero is releasing carcinogens, reproductive harm agents, and they've been doing this for 20 years. And I'll throw it back at them and say, no, they've been running this unit for 56 years. And there have been no elevated cases of cancer, reproductive harm agents in the city of Benicia. It's actually a very clean, healthy place to live. Same thing with the industrial park around the refinery and the workers within the refinery. There are no elevated cases of anything. And then the city gets, I don't know, $30, $40 million of the fine, and the mayor of Benicia is on the air board.
Isn't that handy?
Shot himself in the foot.
Well, they did because the refinery had an excellent relationship, especially Exxon and Valero. You know, it's like they would take their firefighters to Texas A&M or Reno back when they had the fire school. They would take them to training. They helped them buy some of the nicest equipment, you know, anywhere in the Bay Area. You know, they had a good partnership with the city. Now their cash cow is gone. They may, whether they got that money or not, that's it. After that, it's done. It's like 15-20% of Benicia's budget was the refinery, you know, the money they got every year. And it's gone, and nobody's going to come buy the refinery. That's the thing. Nobody's going to buy it.
I wonder how they're planning on making up that shortfall. That's a lot.
I have no idea. I mean, Budweiser's shutting down in the same county. Solano County lost the refinery, and they're losing the Budweiser plant in Fairfield that was built in the mid-70s. It's shutting down.
Yeah.
So what does that take with it? I mean, we had, and I keep meaning to go look it up again, we had 41 refineries?
Yeah, something like that in the 80s. It takes us down to basically down to 7. And even though, you know, Valero says they're going to keep their Wilmington refinery open, I know for a fact that they wrote off basically all the losses. They wrote off their Wilmington refinery, so I wouldn't be surprised to see them announce sometime in the middle to the end of the year that it's coming down. That'll take us down to six.
Well, it just makes sense. I mean, I don't care what kind of business you're in. If you're taking a loss every year, you got to do something different. You can't continue to do that.
Yeah, Bill, you have a fiduciary responsibility to your shareholders.
Sure. Absolutely.
And it's not a loss because there's no demand. It isn't that kind of loss.
The demand has barely dropped. The CEC was not even close on their estimate of how many electric cars are going to be running around. They're still consuming somewhere around 36 million gallons of gasoline a day.
Yeah.
And then under the CEC, you look at it, they project jet fuel consumption is going to go up something like 10 or 15% in the next 5 or 7 or 8 years.
And that's the California Energy Commission, just for those people who don't speak acronym. So how do they, I mean, I hate even asking this question, but what are they basing that on? What's the calculation when they talk about it? Oh, we're going to do that because?
Yeah, well, the jet fuel, they're just anticipating into industry growth and, you know, I guess airports and whatnot, stuff like that. The thing that when we were talking about at the break, when we were talking about the crude oil pipeline, mm-hmm. and it being reclassified as interstate, and then there's another state bill, 1137, I think it is. But anyway, there's another state bill where homes and schools can't be within, it's over half a mile, it's like 3,200 feet of one of those pump jacks. So right now, I think it was maybe the Pambani and them, they're fighting that now because that takes 15 to 20% of the gas, the crude oil production offline. Also, we know the president, we've heard he's going to intercede on the Palisades. What we need now, and this, you know, we presented this report going on 4 months ago now. The problem, the potential, okay, the potential of the situation we're in with the refineries is, if you look at immigration, illegal immigration, and paying for everybody's medical, and the Palisades, and the train to nowhere, this has the potential to be a bigger hit to California than all those things put together. Mm-hmm. If we see real shortages, which will be across our state and Phoenix and Reno and Las Vegas, again, it's not like the 70s. I've heard people say, well, you know, we had gas lines in the 70s. Well, that's true, but it's not the same. They had the refineries. There's no pipelines coming into our state. It all has to be imported from overseas. So, you know, to sit there and think, something's not going to happen. I mean, Chevron had a big fire 2 months ago down in El Segundo, totally knocked them offline. Their jet production knocked their gasoline units offline for probably like a week. So that's the situation we're in. If people do anything, get your congressman and say, "Hey, President Trump, intervene. We need to take federal EPA, take the California Air Resource Board and the California Energy Commission." And these other agencies, and tell them you no longer, just like they said with the pipeline down south pumping the crude oil into California, you no longer have jurisdiction over this. You're done. Now they're on federal EPA guidelines, which the rest of the country's on, and the rest of the country is doing quite well, and they have clean air and fantastic prices and no problem with supply. That's where we're at now.
The thing that I posted at gascrisis.org was the latest deal you sent me. Average LA and Orange County prices rise for the ninth consecutive day, and that was 2 days ago. And if you click on that, it'll take you to the article, but that's just the beginning. So it's like, well, I think it's at 1.9, there's a 1.9, I'll look it up here. Anyway, so it's already starting. Yeah, 1.9 cents on Thursday.
Valero's a big gasoline maker. That's the thing. They're per barrel of oil, crude oil, they convert it, those conversion units, cracking units, they convert more of their feed to gasoline than anybody else in the state. But that's the way they were designed to run, because that's the way Exxon built it back in 1969. Mm-hmm. They saw that coming, was the need for gasoline, and now it's going the other way.
Well, and just with that little bit of change, here they've kind of quantified all this. The average price has risen 12.9 cents over the past 9 days, including 1.9 cents on Thursday, according to figures from the AAA and Oil Price Information Service. It's 10 cents more than a week ago. So it's like as the rest of the country starts to see major decreases in their gas prices, we're not going to see that.
Well, no, the price, the relatively, I'll say relatively, low prices that we've had compared to prices we've seen before because of the fact that crude oil prices are down and we're in the winter blend. But that's all about the shift. Crude oil prices, I don't anticipate them changing, but we're going to go out of our winter blend. Also, both PBF refineries that are online, the one in Martinez, the one down south, they're going into a shutdown for maintenance called a turnaround for 45 or 50 days. So one PBF refinery is going offline here pretty soon for first quarter, and then another one's going offline in the second quarter. And we are switching to the summer blend, which reduces our total gasoline pool by about 5 or 6% our available supply. That's why the prices go up typically with the summer blend. When we go into the summer with everything running the normal, prices still go up because the supply of gasoline drops off from the summer blend. So we lost Valero. We're going to have two refineries go into a maintenance shutdown, and we're going to go into the summer blend. So it's very possible we'll see gas prices in north of $8 a gallon. And this is assuming nothing happens. You know, I don't want to keep repeating myself, but, you know, another refinery goes down. You know, something happens out there. A theater kind of opens up somewhere out there in the world, starts affecting our supply. There are many things that can occur that can take that to $9, $10, $12 a gallon. Right now we're looking at maybe $8.43, I think was the calculation the professor made. I see that happening, and like you said, it's already starting to walk up.
Do we have the ability, you know, we talk about importing the finished product from overseas in big tankers. Do we have the ability to make up the difference in tankers rather than refining it?
We don't. If it comes from the like the Gulf Coast, that has to be in a Jones Act tanker, and all those tankers that they're American made and American staffed, and those tankers are all spoken for. So we don't really have that flexibility. We definitely don't have the pipelines. The only pipeline coming in anywhere is from El Paso into Tucson. Phoenix doesn't have its own pipeline. Reno and Vegas, they're in trouble. They're really in trouble. They're at the end of our pipelines. They're totally dependent on us. There was some talk about maybe running a pipeline from Utah to Nevada. And if they did that, you're talking 3 or 4 years down the road. And those refineries they're small refineries. They don't have the capacity to produce the fuel for Reno and Vegas right now. So Reno, I mean, we're a fuels island, and Nevada is right there with us. They're totally, both states are totally dependent on these fuel imports, which, again, we did not have the infrastructure to continue to bring them in. We don't have the ability to offload that many fuels tankers. That's a big part of the problem, too. We're at the edge as far as what we can bring in.
And if we brought it here, you still have to, you know, put it somewhere and refine it and move it. And got to take a really quick break. We're going to come back with our guest, Mike Ariza. And we have posted all sorts of interviews. You can read the document he has referenced. It is on the page at gascrisis.org. You can read it right there. You don't even have to download it. But it was released October 21st, 2025, written with Mike Ariza and Professor Michael Miche from USC, and Stan Ellis, who is a member of the California Assembly and an oil and gas man out of the Central Valley, the land man. So there you have it. Get educated. If you don't want to read the 10-pager, read the two-pager, the point of no return that Mike wrote. Send that to somebody, and if it still doesn't interest them, you should just move on. Your friend isn't Your friend is low IQ. How else could I say it? So I have a couple of possible fixes for us in our musical selections for this break, and we'll be right back. You are listening to We the People. You can find us at WeThePeopleRadio.us.
Your size, just when I think I'm gonna get away.
Would you like to ride in my beautiful balloon? Would you like to ride in my beautiful balloon?
We could float among the stars together, you and I.
For we can fly.
We can fly.
Up and away, my beautiful,
And there you have it. Two possible solutions. We will travel everywhere by balloon, or magic will save us.
Yeah. Abracadabra.
Abracadabra. Yep, right? Dear God. And that leftover from the Chinese spy balloon show we did, I was like, oh, yeah, still got the balloon song. Oh, Lord. So after running the refinery for 13 years down there, you had listed for me when we were chatting on the phone the other day all the different things that come out of the refinery, because I think somehow we kind of think, you know, okay, oil comes in, like gas comes out, and that's kind of it. But there's a lot more that is produced there that we use all the time that will now be not produced.
Yeah, do they produce like paint thinner and you know, stuff, you know, creosote, no, you know, there's so many products. Do they produce that there, or does that go off-site and get produced somewhere else?
They don't produce that there. Those will be refineries with specialties like polypropylene and like Richmond. Chevron Richmond has the Richmond Luol project in the refinery where they make their Chevron oils and greases and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Valero did purchased the asphalt plant that is there by the refinery. That was originally was not there. So they make asphalt. The major refineries they make propane, propane, gasoline jet, and diesel. And they'll vary a little bit. It's like Flying J didn't make jet fuel, and they didn't have a cat cracker, so they made feed or oil that was prepared for a cat cracker, and they would sell it. You know, the cat cracker is a big gasoline conversion unit. So it all depends on where they're at and what they're doing. The refineries that I ran just made the major components that we know about.
Hmm.
So, yeah, there's like 6,000, 5,000 products made for crude oil. Asphalt's a big one. I mean, Valero's down, so that asphalt plant's down.
Wow. So our roads aren't going to get any better for a while? Because, you know, they're doing such a great job anyway, but now they'll be a little short on asphalt.
It's been fantastic. So that's propane, it's gas, like actual, you know, car gas, diesel.
Mm-hmm. And jet fuel.
So the jet fuel, what's going to make up the jet fuel loss that comes out of there?
They have to bring it, they have to refine it, and they have to bring it from somewhere overseas.
So overseas is going to supply our jet fuel for our military defense on the West Coast.
So it'll be tankers full of jet fuel coming across the ocean.
That's correct. And diesel, and a bunch of gasoline. That's where it's getting. That's where we're really, our state was not designed to do this.
No.
And again, when you look at all the possibilities that can affect those tankers getting here, the fuel supply, you know, I mean, like, you know, a little while back when my wife was visiting her family, a typhoon went through Hong Kong and Guangzhou, shut down shipping in the whole area for a few days, took their high-speed rail offline for a couple of days. You know, these things, if one goes through and takes a refinery that's supplying us offline, that's making our fuel, if one of our own remaining refineries goes offline from a power failure or a fire like Chevron did, again, this is where Governor Newsom is totally disingenuous. He cannot predict all these different events that could affect our supply.
No, and you know it's going to happen. It always does. I mean, there's...
Well, it's not... Yeah, Bill, it's not... I mean, just common sense.
Yeah.
Just common sense. You don't have to dig or develop some equation to figure this stuff out. It's you know, this stuff, a lot of it within the last 8 weeks to 10 weeks has occurred. Chevron went down from a fire. A tanker was hijacked in the Indian Ocean, a fuels tanker that was bound for a Singapore refinery. You know, you got a typhoon typhoons get generated in that part of the world all the time. We know, you know, there's all kinds of hotbeds going on. You got Iran going on right now. You had a cargo ship that caught fire, and the fire was so bad they pulled it away from the port of Los Angeles to make sure it didn't damage the port. I mean, if something happens to the port of Los Angeles, we are.
Oh, yeah. We're in big trouble.
Yeah, and the thing is, we can't, again, I've said this, but, you know, we can't pull out of it. We don't have the refineries like we did back in the 70s to get things back to normal. We just don't have them. They're not available. So we get into a deep shortage, and that's where, when we were writing our report, you know, military is big-time compromised, especially, you know, you got Valero making most of Travis's jet fuel. And right now they're burning 190,000 gallons a day, but that's peacetime. There's nothing going on. You start sending sorties, they could punch well over a million gallons a day of fuel. We could end up possibly with our because you got a C5 and a KC-10 fuel extender. They almost use 100,000 gallons themselves, just those two planes. You know, we could end up with our military. We could end up with our military based in the Midwest.
Mm. Well, you know, we had a hard time figuring out how to keep water in the reservoirs down south to fight fires. I have full confidence that they're going to have this figured out for any kind of emergency contingency plan.
Well, and there we had talked about this at one point. I don't remember which time, but there's kind of a misnomer that the storage facilities, like at Valero, could be redeployed to store oil, gas, whatever kind of product, but that's not really workable, correct?
It's not workable like they're thinking it is, and right now Valero, due to their vapor recovery system, Valero is not capable of offloading gasoline at their dock. They can bring in jet, they can bring in diesel, but they cannot receive gasoline at this point.
And why is that? Isn't it kind of the same equipment?
It's the same equipment, but there's special requirements because of gasoline and the vapor pressure, and that equipment's not, that equipment's offline.
Mm.
So they'd have to put in some investment, put in some money, which I think I'd have a hard time seeing them doing that, but, you know.
Yeah, right.
Well, yeah, and after these guys got fined into oblivion for, what exactly was the $1.1 billion, what's the nickel tour on what that involved?
Well, it's just the investments of the enemy capital they've had to put in there. You know,
are we talking like Air Resources Board, you know, mumbo jumbo fines? I mean, is that kind of at the base of this? Is regulatory?
Well, it's fine. It's regulations. It's carbon trap, cap and trade, all these different.
Of course, how could I have forgotten that?
You got all these different fines and fees and taxes that are put on the refinery. Well, again, Valero doesn't own their crude oil, so you know if they're paying rent prices for the crude, then what they're getting out, you know, they're selling it for relatively cheap. A lot of the reason why our prices are so high is for all these other reasons, all these other fees and taxes and regulations that are added on to the gasoline. They're not making that money. So what they're actually making at the end, you know, with the product that they're making, that's where they, that's part of the reason why, part of the reason why they lose money.
Sure.
The margins aren't there. You want to get specific, you know, more specifics, the professor next weekend can definitely address some of those specific questions, but that's a lot of it. They're just, what they sell it for, what it's being sold for to us is not the refinery making that money. They're making, I don't know, $1.50, $1.80 a gallon less. It goes all to the state. So when you're looking at, you're buying the crude oil, you're doing maintenance. A refinery maintenance period can cost $300-$400, $500 million just to do the maintenance that they have to do every 3 to 4 years. You know, shut down and what they got to do. So it's all those things factor into the bottom line, and that's where all their losses have come from.
Yeah. Makes sense. And all the people, like, so when you spoke with some of the folks that you had worked with in the past, they are relocating, retiring, all of the above?
All of the above. And, I mean, you think about it, Aaron, Bill, you know, if you're 45 or so, pick a number, you know, a little younger than us, you get a chance to go to Louisiana, or you get a chance to go to Texas, make the same amount of money or make more, but you leave California, you know, hey, we'll offer you a transfer. I'm gone.
yeah, your tax burden goes way down. Your
cost of living,
you know.
Everything, yeah. You know, you have the highest electricity costs here, you know, housing costs, taxes, you know, the whole nine yards. So, yeah, no, it's like buy California. But, you know, we got folks that, you know, I'm 60. I would just retired. I would have said, okay, hey, thank you, I'm done. You know, if they offered me some transfer, I might have taken it and worked a few more years. But a lot of these folks they're retired, they're transferring, and you're not going to get them back.
No.
Some are just quitting, you know, going to different jobs. But bottom line is your skilled workforce in these different refineries goes away, and you need that skilled workforce to restart the refinery. That's the biggest problem. That's another one of the dangers is, once the qualified people are gone, they are near impossible to restart. And especially Valero, there's few people on the planet that are qualified to run it. And even those have a lot of people that have a lot of experience, they don't have experience with that plant. So they got to get up to speed on that plant, and they show up and it's stone cold and it's not even running. So there's a lot of this many, many, many issues to trying to get them restarted.
Well, and out here in the West, we've seen a similar power slide with timber, with the timber industry. And so as the mills have closed and closed and closed, nobody's coming rolling in going, well, let's just start them all up again. Once an industry is crushed like that, there isn't a huge appetite for people to spend the type of money it takes to get that moving again.
No, and you're stuck buying products that have to be imported, which costs
a huge
way more money.
Even if the administration, this administration, comes in and makes some changes, I've never, you know, I've put gas in the car, and there ends my my association. but even I know that that's a terrible investment, because in a couple of years, the next phase of the operation could roll in and, you know, crush them again.
And it always has been. You know, it always has been. We show up, we put the gas in the tank. You know, we never would have expected. You know, now we're advocating our price control, our supply control to foreign countries. And, you know, the foreign countries that may or may not remain friendly to us. We don't know what the situation the world could develop and affect those countries. We've advocated our price control. We're paying whatever, you know, it's like India was buying Russian oil. So we were basically supporting Ukraine, or supporting Putin in the Ukrainian war. Apparently India is going to switch now, but then the crude oil that they're going to get is going to cost them more. So that is going to be reflected in the price of the finished products they're sending to us. Mm-hmm. You got to pay the shipping costs, you know, all these costs on top of it, you know, just stack on up. And then you still got to pay cap and trade and all these other taxes that come along with California, even though the fuel's made 7,000-8,000 miles away. all those things just add up, and it's just going to get more and more expensive, and the supply is going to get shorter. And when you get down to about a 11 or 12 day supply of gasoline available in California, the price jumps a buck and a half.
Yeah,
a gallon.
The world changes.
Yes,
Mr. Ariza, we have run out of time. You have indeed blinded us with science, and we appreciate that. And we will chat with you next week for a longer stint with Stan Ellis and Professor Miche. Thank you so much. Happy Super Bowl Sunday for what that's worth. And we're going to be right back talking about election integrity. And you can find all of this information at gascrisis.org.